Hi, everybody, and welcome. I think it's to our 51st Dissipation of Glamour webinar, and Olivia and Tui and I invite you to participate with us in this ongoing effort, and all of our staff from the Moria Federation. BL and Brett and Joe Waltz, she can't be here, I think, tonight, but always backing us up and making sure that we can communicate. So we try to keep our offerings coming to you over the webinars and broadcasts. Our broadcast schedule, we've been on, Tui and I have been on the all-night train here a bit, which is the reason we had to have the evening schedule here for the glamour, and couldn't do the first two. But tomorrow we'll be dealing with the souls of nations, and then that tomorrow, which is Saturday, and it'll be an AM for us, AM GMT. So that probably throws some of you back the night before. Excuse me. And then the attracting money for hierarchical purposes. Some people just think, well, the all-powerful Christ will appear on the white horse and simply throw Satan into prison and command the salvation of the faithful and all the rest of it. So when they hear that the Christ works through normal channels and needs money, that's so the new age can be built by human hands and human feet. The law of Sirius, which, well, there's several laws, but the law of freedom, hence the violation of the will of the human being. I mean, as DK says, we, the hierarchy, could impose our will upon humanity, and nothing good would come out of it, because it would simply be an imposition, and all of the unsolved problems would appear later, again, and have to be worked through the changing of human will. So there's only so much under the law of Sirius that the great members of hierarchy can do, and we are responsible for changing our own orientation under their very impressive light and guidance. But they're not allowed to touch the center of will. And that's so different from the Plutonic approach of the Black Lodge, which seeks to compel the will. So, yes, the Christ works through the normal channels that humanity works through, and money is needed for the reappearance process and for the externalization of the hierarchy. And DK tells us it's even the crux of the whole problem. He says some of us just cannot seem to give, But if we put things in right proportion, we would see how necessary it is. So that's a little plug to tune in with us. I really encourage this, especially for Moria Federation students, and really for all of us, that we attend, when possible, these meditations that DK has offered in Discipleship in the New Age and encouraged in other ways. The triangles meditation is a daily work which must go on. The reappearance of the Christ is offered in the Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2 book. Very important, powerful. The glamour work we're undertaking through a webinar, not so much through a broadcast, and we know how important it is, and even how dangerous it is. You're taking a risk. That's the one group that came the closest to failing. It seemed that they had so much of the sixth ray that they were an easy target, and yet they had to have it to put them in touch with the sixth or astral plane. Every one of them had some sixth ray vehicle and needed it. Then, of course, the way to improve things and bring the causal body of various nations into effective condition is by invoking the soul of the particular nation. And this has to do with taking care of all that emergency work. I'm somehow dumbfounded when I, my own country, you know, when the latest here is that maybe help from Puerto Rico will be withdrawn because they haven't shown enough appreciation. And dropping out of the United Nations educational and cultural group, UNESCO. So, you know, sometimes it has to get pretty dark before the dawn. And sometimes, you know, we're heading into Aquarius. And when Leo is a wonderful sign, you know, I've got a lot of it myself. And it's not wonderful because I've got it, okay. But it's a great sign of service once certain issues are passed. But our problem here is when you have the primitive Leo mentality, you can't see beyond the confines of your own aura. And so the whole spirit of the group and internationalism and one humanity, you know, America first. All right. So we have a lot of work to do to change the inner climate of non-participation. I mean, I don't want to get political about this, but, you know, you do see a difference with Obama having Aquarius as his rising sign and our present president having Leo as the rising sign. So, you know, all astrology plays into all of this, and we have to understand that these energies, according to the form upon which they impinge, will be used for positive or negative results. So this is all by way of saying that we meditators, such as we are, we have to really get to work with real purpose and intention and an inner persistent fortitude to handle these outer problems. Nobody believes we can be effective, but we know how the hierarchy works, and we can be effective. The average mentality doesn't give us credit, but then they don't have to. And, you know, I don't know how many of you have had Master DK walk into your room the way Master KH walked into Alice Bailey's room one nice Sunday morning, but we all agree Master DK is pretty effective, isn't he? Through the books he's written, and through his presence and through his encouragement and his amazing teaching. And we may never, he's been working mentally with our souls and so forth. So we can work inwardly too and be very effective. Well, just a little, let's just have a little pause here for a moment. And we're gathering together, you know, as personalities which are in the process of soul infusion. And that soul energy is a really real, qualitatively real factor, energy. And we're relating to each other in that way, wherever we may happen to be geographically. And we all come together for a purpose which is hierarchically sanctioned, necessary. And we're offering our presence and our intelligence and our love and our will, all for the improvement of the human condition through the improvement of human consciousness. And one of the big things with largely emotionally polarized humanity is to deal effectively with the glamours which so badly mislead humanity and bring them to chase after what is not truly desirable. It may be their desire, but it's not desirable in terms of the plan. So we've got to correct all that. First in our own lives, and then increasingly to be effective in the lives of human beings. So we will attempt then to work subjectively and, you know, along the way, get rid of our own glamours, our own illusions, so that the right hand and the left hand know what each other's doing. It's great to have wonderful intentions, but if your left hand is doing something contradictory to your good intentions, then you're split. And that we've all experienced that and have to get into the integrated condition where we don't overlook a single fault we may have. Not easy, but necessary. One Om. Om. Okay. So look, we're talking about fear, the great planetary dweller on the threshold. And the last time, a week ago, we dealt with this paragraph. It was so rich. Basically, we just did one paragraph. It was a long one. Well, or at least two. Okay. But one section. One section. Now, DK is listing certain types of fears, and you know, when we undertake fear, the challenge of fear, it's so deeply subconscious, we've forgotten the roots of our fears. Interestingly, they don't only lie in the solar plexus. The he tells one of the students in his group who was quite a strong Scorpio, as I recall, moon in Cancer, Gemini rising, that the ancient fears are hidden very much in the sacral center. And I'm recalling him saying that, you know, it's a planetary problem, really. In a way, our planetary logos has not overcome fear on a cosmic level. I would say, at the second initiation, you have to so confront your astral body that a lot of those fears are eliminated. But I would say also that it's more at the fourth initiation where you really make the achievement. I mean, if you can face the various kinds of death that the fourth degree initiate will be facing, then, you know, you've pretty well dealt with the planetary level of fear. As far as how this operates on a cosmic level, you know, I think it's beyond us to really know. But there's always this shrinking back. You know, I'm recalling it from psychosynthesis. It's called, and also, well, mostly psychosynthesis, the repression of the sublime. It's not only a fear of the bad things and the temptations and the ways in which still have control over us, but there's a shrinking back from the light. You know, I think Jung dealt with this as well. When you have these numinous experiences, there's something in us that really doesn't want to go through that, you know, that likes the darkness more. Jesus was commenting on this, or the Christ through him, you know, that there are these people, they love darkness. Well, certainly the vehicles within us would prefer in their present condition not to be brought to light. And so we so often, you know, work our mind around rationalizing things until we don't have to face anymore what's really going on within our vehicles. It's a very deep issue, and there are many, many fears. And they always hold us back. They always cause a shrinking of our possibilities. The old saying, perfect love casteth out all fear. I think it's, you know, very true. And maybe some of us here or there at various times have had the kind of courage which love can bring, especially perfect love. You know, from this perspective, among humanity and human beings, Christ must be the most fearless of all, because his love is the closest to perfect. Well, we're all going to go through that, where we learn how to drop the fears and be so truthful that it will be said of us, the truth shall make you free, as Jesus and Christ through him said. You know, we don't know sometimes what's Jesus talking and what is the Christ talking, but he told us that one day, Master DK said, that the gold and silver threads would be disentangled from the Christ Jesus story, and the episodes in the life of Jesus, the silver threads, and the great events in the life of the Christ, the golden threads, would be separated from each other, and we'd be able to really understand how it is a sixth degree initiate cooperates with his instrument, the fourth degree initiate. And I, you know, it's my impression that we have the same issue going on with the true Buddha, who at the time Gautama was born had already been the head of the hierarchy for 2,500 years, almost. And so I think there was another issue there of a great initiate working through a lesser initiate, and a kind of a 6-4 situation going on. I don't think anything is really said about this, but it just makes sense. You know, you don't go off looking for yourself in the jungle when you've been head of the hierarchy for over 2,000 years. So if we just stands to reason that it was a dual manifestation that the hierarchy tends to use off there in India, just as it was in the Palestine of old. Well, here is the very first fear that we're going to be dealing with. Maybe it'll be enough for tonight. You know, we don't have to rush the project or the process. I would say this, that if the glamour of fear has less and less hold over us, the other glamours will tend to melt away. Because I think, you know, it's all somehow based on the fear of annihilation, the fear of non-being, the fear of ceasing to be, you know, of apparently being and then for all eternity no longer being. Just the way before being, all eternity elapsed. A lot of paradoxes there. Before one was. Well, obviously there's some faulty thinking going on there. And we can think our way, I think, through these fears, plus the methods, the three methods which Master DK gives for the dissipation of fear. And I think we're going to have to look at those pretty carefully, all the way from the normal fears to an attack by the Black Lodge, where the whole hierarchy, tuning in with the whole hierarchy and the violet light, is possible. I think we'll have to do that. Anyway, this is the fear of death, and what's it based upon? Well, a terror of the final rending processes in the act of death itself. I think that's especially for violent deaths, you know, being ripped apart by an animal. They cause so much destruction, we are told in the early days, wreaking havoc among early humanity. You kind of wonder how early, but I think we're going back almost, you know, to Lemurian times, and maybe even before there was a real self-consciousness in the human being. They had their unique line of evolution through the Adamic and the Hyperborean races. And, you know, there were processes going on there millions and millions of years ago that are anchored deep in the subconsciousness of man, which DK said can be stirred like a cauldron until it becomes a boiling cauldron running your life. That can happen with the subconscious. So there's lots of, we've all died violent deaths, some expected, some unexpected. We've all been on the battlefield and been torn apart by swords and other instruments of war, you know, very unpleasant, which is why one kind of suppresses those things. But one day the movie will be shown, even if you're the only person in the movie house, you get to see it all. So the tearing apart of the vehicle, very unpleasant, but DK kind of makes light of it. And the most you'll really get out of that is just you're going to feel terrible for a minute and get a little electric shock, and that's it. We'll see what he says. Then point B, horror of the unknown and indefinable. I mean, we all drink from the mythological river of forgetfulness, which is Lethe, Lethe. And we forget all that we knew on the other side until our brain is ready, really, to respond to these things, which he says it will. So we're going into the great blackness, and that's akin to annihilation of being. You just don't know whether you will survive it, and you think you probably won't. So what's lurking there in the dark, you know? We don't have a handle on it, and no matter how many times we've died, and he says, just when you die, you know, on the other side, it looks like a very familiar experience. We experience it as familiar. Well, that's after the we go through this horror of the unknown and undefinable. And then, of course, there's, you know, maybe it happened in the early Aryan race, maybe later Atlantis, but we became separated from our solar angel in consciousness, and we became separated from the higher presence, ourself as a soul, and doubt began to enter in. I think with the fifth ray and its skepticism in the fifth root race, a lot of doubt enters, and we still have people that are in a profound state of skepticism. So we doubt that we will survive, and the people who do believe it are looked upon by these intelligent types as foolish, you know. Or the opiate to religion is the opiate of the masses, we've been told, and we're high on something, you know, because we think we're actually going to survive. So we don't have any kind of proof, or maybe some people do have some proof, you know, coming and going on the astral plane and being able to slip out of your body now and then and seeing what it's like. But you know, DK says, until the end, you just don't know. There's always that doubt. There's a wonderful picture by Rorick of a saint praying. He's a fervent, he looks like he believes, but you see his heel, and there's a tiny little black serpent, and it's biting his heel. And this is called the serpent of doubt. So, you know, check on yourself how much you really believe and why you believe. Have you had the experience that makes it possible to know rather than to just believe and to be assured of the reality of the inner God which we are. Then the whole issue of detachment. Gosh, you know, look at all these things that make us fear death. Here's the unhappiness at leaving loved ones behind, or of being left behind. It's our attachment to each other on the physical plane, and we don't know that when we leave the body, we will find the loved ones that were there, if they haven't reincarnated yet, and there's still ways to communicate that way. It feels like separation, and our love is violated, you know. We think we'll never see that person again. It has a terrible effect upon the solar plexus and the heart. Very unpleasant. I remember, you know, it was so interesting, astonishing, really. You know, the Star Wars, she played Princess Leia. Gosh, am I going to forget her name? Anyway, she's Debbie Reynolds' daughter, you know. Fisher, isn't it? Carrie Fisher. She died of cardiac arrest, and a few days later, her mother died. You know, had a broken heart. Broken hearts actually show up as some kind of anomaly in the heart muscle, and she just didn't want to be separated from her daughter. She just died immediately after, and what was the cause? You know, broken heart. So this attachment between us is very, very strong. And we have to be assured during the Aquarian Age that things will actually be flowing and we'll be able to communicate with each other, whatever side of this particular veil we're on. And there are many, many veils. And to those who don't know how to pass, they form insuperable barriers. But every once in a while, you might find yourself on the other side and, you know, it becomes clear to you. Okay, point E, ancient reactions to past violent deaths lying deep in the subconscious. Again, very unpleasant. And, you know, I kind of, it's a bit like point A, the terror of the final rending process. I suppose if you're lying in a hospital in a coma, the rending process is not so terrible. It's more a slipping away, you know, but there are all these other ways to die. And we've all experienced this and mercifully perhaps have forgotten what it's all about. But these are all the reasons that we fear death. It's one of the major fears we have. But I say, based upon a more existential fear, the fear of the annihilation of consciousness. Then the clinging to form life in general. It's a lot like, you know, not regretting to leave the loved ones behind, but it's form in general, because our consciousness is so benighted that we're primarily identified with form, and we don't realize the subtle forms, and our life in the brain consciousness is so activated by consciousness of form that the other things seem less real. Well, later they're going to seem more real, but in a way it's the only world we know. And the savage human being, or, you know, early incarnator, that's all they know. And so they don't have very much inner life at all, and we've all been through that long ago, whatever sphere we've been on, whether the Earth globe or the moon chain or the previous solar system. Anyway, form dominates our consciousness, and we don't want to leave it because it's the only thing we really know as real, even though it's the most unreal. And then, finally, point G or 7, old erroneous teaching as to heaven and hell, both equally unpleasant in prospect to certain types. Well, you know, those types probably have a very strong belief system and a very, very powerful sixth ray. So you know how it is, eternal hell or eternal heaven, which is, you know, pretty boring the way it's usually cast or understood. There are heaven worlds on the upper levels of the astral plane, which is not the real heaven of Devachan, which is on the fourth sublevel, we're told, of the mental plane. And then the hell worlds, plane number 7 of the astral plane, and maybe plane number 6 isn't so much better either. Those are the average, for the average Christian or believer, those are the hell worlds. But eternal hell, eternal heaven, no. All of those things are erroneous and they have to be corrected. Okay, so these are the seven factors that DK gives us for the reason as the basis of fearing death. So let's see what he says here. I think we'll just do one paragraph. It's a big one. Yeah, it's a big one. Woo! And there's more. There's more. Maybe we'll only do part of this. We don't want to overdo it. And DK says, I speak about death as one who knows the matter from both the outer world experience and the inner life expression. There is no death. Well, that's such a declarative statement. You know, he just lays it right out there. And, you know, he'll be one of the externalizing masters who will be giving the ancient healing methods. And in the book Esoteric Healing, there's a lot about the death process, as some of you who are deeply into healing know, having read it and practiced it. There is, as you know, entrance into fuller life. Not death, but entrance into fuller life. You know, there is freedom from the handicaps of fleshly vehicle. I'm remembering I was in a radio studio with Mary Bailey back in the early 80s. Seems a long time now, 30-something years ago. And I don't know, we got on the subject of death, and she said, you mean there would be any question in exchanging this for that? You know, she was talking about the two sides, one being the life in form and the other the life free from the handicaps of the fleshly vehicle. In her way of presenting it, in her mind, there was just no question. And it just impressed me so much. You know, she was a very subtle person in a way, but very, very impressive. And her first-ray soul had a way of really making a point. Then he goes on here. The rending process, so much dreaded, does not exist except in the cases of violent and of sudden death. And then the only true disagreeables, you know, I like it when they say it's unpleasant, it's disagreeable, you know, it minimizes what it is in most people's mind. So anyway, the only true disagreeables are an instant and overwhelming sense of imminent peril and destruction, and something closely approaching an electric shock, no more. Well, you know, he makes it seem like you could pass through even a violent death pretty quickly, you know, unless you were tortured to death or something like that. I mean, there are perverted consciousnesses that want to make the death process go on and on. So, but, you know, hopefully we're getting somewhat beyond that, although in our secret police, and we all have them, a lot of things happen that would horrify most of us, I think. So anyway, violent sudden death and the disagreeables, that sense of dread, which we naturally fear, and then an electric shock. Bing, you know, the electrical connection is snapped. No more. For the unevolved, death is literally a sleep and a forgetting. For the mind is not sufficiently awakened to react. And the storehouse of memory is as yet practically empty. And I think he's saying that Devachan depends very much on memory. After all, it is on the fourth subplane of the lower mental plane, and you work up a lot based on the previous lives and your memory from the previous life you've just lived, and you work it into capacity for your next incarnation. So, you know, some people think, well, okay, I'm going to give up heaven. Well, you know, you just don't have that kind of choice. You can give up heaven when you're qualified to give up heaven. And that means that the sixth petal of your egoic lotus is pretty well open if you're going to be one of those who is entitled to give up the very necessary heaven world and the building of faculty required based upon previous memory and for the sake of your next life. So it's something to think about. For the average citizen, good citizen, death is a continuance of a living process in his consciousness and the carrying forward of the interests and tendencies of the life. His consciousness and his sense of awareness are the same and unaltered. I mean, Uncle Frank here and Uncle Frank there, still Uncle Frank, okay? So it's not like a huge epiphany when you pass beyond the mortal coil. He does not sense much difference. He is well taken care of. I noticed that, you know, they must have a good maintenance system on the other side to make sure you... And oft is unaware, this is interesting, that he has passed through the episode of death. I remember a movie with Richard Dreyfuss, or I forget, you know, I think that's his name. He was walking along whistling in the other world, not really realizing he had passed through death as a firefighter whose plane went down. So I wonder how many of us are surprised. What do you mean dead? I'm perfectly alive. We don't even know it. Now, for the wicked and cruelly selfish, for the criminal and for those few who live for the material side only, there eventuates the condition which we call the earthbound soul. It's a lot related to Capricorn and all that Capricorn can mean negatively. Every sign has its negativity, and Capricorn can make you pretty form bound. The links they have forged with earth and the earthward bias of all their desires, the bias, you know, towards dense materiality, third ray, seventh ray, Saturn, Capricorn, earth signs, you know, when lived in the incorrect way, can result in this. All their desires force them to remain close to the earth and their last setting in the earth environment, you know, the hauntings and all that kind of thing that go on. And, remember Hamlet, you know, right in the beginning, there's been a spirit that has been appearing on the ramparts of the castle. Basically, that's Hamlet's father, and he wants to talk to him. And finally, Hamlet does come out and talk to the ghost of his father, so to speak, because the father has come to right a wrong. The uncle has killed him, murdered him to take over his kingship, and he wants to be avenged. And it falls to Hamlet to avenge him. Okay, so that's the beginning of that whole marvelous play. And that, you know, fits with this reason for earthboundedness, special love, the righting of wrongs, those kinds of things. That's not necessarily the material person. The material person will hang around, you know, simply because they're material. But these are special examples of reasons to have to appear. They seek desperately and by every possible means to recontact their environment, their earth environment, and to enter. Alcoholics often do this, you know, hanging around other alcoholics to get that whiff of alcohol or drink or drug obsession, you know, even taking possession of the body of someone who is using the drug or the alcohol of their choice. So, you know, there are many obsessors, and they come in this lower category. In a few cases, this is the other side, great personal love for those left behind, or the non-fulfillment of a recognized and urgent duty, hold the good and the beautiful in a somewhat similar condition. Hamlet's father was a good king, you know, but there was a wrong to be righted, and eventually Hamlet righted the wrong. For the aspirant, and that's who we are, death is an immediate entrance into a sphere of activity and of expression to which he is well accustomed, and which he at once recognizes as not new. In his sleeping hours, he has developed a field of active service and of learning. Now, I don't know how many of us are aware of all the things we do in terms of our active service and our learning and our school and all that. The whole story of invisible helpers comes in here, and sometimes people who don't know anything about occultism recount that they've been helping on the other side. I remember talking to Marion Walter, who was the last living disciple of Master DK in that particular group, and she was telling the stories during the war, the Second World War, how they were busy holding up the soldiers who were making these landings in the water and preventing them from drowning. And, you know, she was working as an invisible helper, only, you know, she remembered it. Okay. He now simply functions in it, in this field of service, for the entire 24 hours, talking in terms of physical plane time, instead of for the usual few hours of earthly sleep. So that's what we have to look forward to. And, you know, it's more the threshold of death experience that prevents such a terror. And, you know, and the whole idea of unfinished business, you know, you have things to do here and you know you haven't completed them. Well, life is long, and eventually in any universe, completion results. So, okay, look, I know that that's all I'm going to talk about here for right now. It's very rich in thought, and maybe we have some thoughts about it. I think we'll deal with this glamour of fear, since it is the major, major glamour on our planet. Of course, it's based upon, as I say, the fear of non-being, you know. But let's just... Oh, today is Friday the 13th. All right. You know why that is. I think it was Jacques de Molay, you know, he was a member of the Knights Templar, the leader, and he and others were put to death on Friday the 13th. It became to be a bad luck day, but there's other reasons for the ill-omened Friday the 13th. So it has to do... Interestingly, DK discusses it. He says it has to do with the fact that there are 12 creative hierarchies, but the members of the Black Lodge seal off the lower concrete mind and make of it an insular vehicle as the 13th hierarchy, or the 13th means of reaching into the subtle worlds. And they have an ability on the level of the concrete mind, which is beyond anything we can conceive. So that, he tells us, is a more occult reason for the ill-omened number 13. And then, you know, popularly, Jacques de Molay, you know, and his co-workers suffered grievously at the hands of the church. There's so much ignorance, you know, we've really got to fight that for the Buddhists and for the Buddha. Ignorance was a great sin. And, you know, we people who are trying to be light bearers, we have to fight that with all we've got. Okay, friends, so now, you know I've gone on here a bit. And if you have any thoughts, questions, anything you want to say, this is the time to do it before we keep on attacking this glamour of fear. I mean, you know, and frankly, you know, every one of us, if we were a fourth degree initiate and going beyond, we could say, well, in terms of human condition, we're pretty fearless, but we're not that. And so if you dig deep enough, we're all going to find something that is holding us back. Okay, Michael. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Thank you. Going back to point A, my take on that is it's more general than the other one. The other one that is the ancient reactions to violent deaths. Point A, I'm thinking of it as for those who have, for instance, a belief in reincarnation. there's a fear of actually going through the process, not a fear of death itself, but fear of going through the process.
Of death or of coming back into it.
of going through the process of what we call death. And then another point is that many of us, I suspect, are actively at work in the period in which we're sleeping. My mother recounts how she was used during her period of sleep during World War II to help those soldiers that were going through that change. So many were dying, they needed help crossing over. And so she remembers that.
That's amazing. And D.K., some of his people, he refreshed the memory of his incarnated group by talking in the intro to Dinah 2 about what the others who had passed on was. And one of them was a military man, and he was welcoming those on the other side, you know, who had been in the military. Another was working with children to preserve their consciousness as they were making the transition. So this is, I think this is a very important transitional kind of work that that some people are put to. I think more and more we're going to know this stuff and remember it. And, basically once the veil lifts, you'll just see all the things you've been doing. That's why he says it's going to be a very familiar experience for everyone once you pass beyond the body.
And I see this whole thing as a major reason in why he talked about developing continuity of consciousness.
Right. Exactly. And he gives that to us. And is it in Dinah 2 or whatever? He tells you how to fall asleep consciously.
It's in several locations.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to assure you, you can keep yourself up all night trying to fall asleep consciously. But I once succeeded in doing that, and I thought it was quite interesting. You know, he says you can. There are three exits through which you may pass. One is the solar plexus, one is the heart, one is the head. And I definitely had the experience of passing out through the heart. Not necessarily a very high thing, but I was awake for the transition, as it were. He tells you how you see these streamers of colored light and all that kind of thing, and that, you know, that's the etheric phenomena as we go through the web, which is attenuating and all that. We have many occult developments in front of us, and we have to seize upon their cultivation in order to make ourselves really useful. So, okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Yeah, appreciate that. Okay, this is, we're all going to pass through this, and I've done so, countless times. Every time a universe dies, the whole universe does this. It passes through the web into absolute infinity, into the absolute deity. And how many universes have there been? Well, if you believe Blavatsky, it's infinite. So things are pretty familiar. it's what we want to be able to do is make them familiar on this side so that we don't have to pass through the processes. Oh, yes, I remember this. There's this old Greek saying, and maybe it's older than Greek, all of life is a learning how to die. All of life is a learning how to die. And then the old saying, I die daily. I die daily. Well, what does that mean? I mean, certainly it's true, in terms of going to sleep, because the only difference between death and going to sleep is this magnetic relationship still exists in sleep, whereas in death it does not to the physical body. But it has other things to do. It has to do with living the dual life and being able to slip in and out of a brain consciousness at will. There's so many occult developments which lie ahead of us in the new schools when the masters undertake the curriculum there, and we're preparing for that, in the Moria Federation and so forth. I don't know how many of you are members of the Moria Federation, but it's getting a time when I always write letters and I say, hey, you've got a good opportunity here to really get deeply into Master DK's curriculum for the preparatory schools of the future. So I would certainly seize it. I remember how happy I was when I discovered the Arcane School. I said, really? There's a school like this that teaches modern discipleship and all that based on DK's books? So I was overjoyed at the prospect, and that was a long time ago. So I certainly encourage y'all, if you're not a member of the Maury Federation, to find a way to really school yourself in these deep, deep matters, which are so essential for your future cooperation with hierarchy in an occult manner. Anyway, that's my pitch for the moment. Other thoughts, other questions? Alex, go ahead. Yeah, Alex.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Good. You always pick a topic that is super relevant at the time.
Oh.
I seem to be talking to a lot of people about death recently. A lot of people are making the transition, or their families are, and this sort of thing. And so a lot of questions have come up. First of all, I wanted to say that I'm always amazed at people who don't think about death, because I seem to have been born thinking about death. And then being introduced to various spiritual practices at a young age, and I was taught how important it was, your last breath and your last thought. And so I took that on board very seriously my whole life. But it that can also be a source of great anxiety, because I have seen from experience that it doesn't matter what you've been practicing or how long you've been practicing, you can't guarantee the way your transition will be. Yeah. And so when I say I think about death, I think about it, I'm not consciously aware of fearing death, because I'm too busy living and planning living. But I'm sure I have a fear of death. It's a subconscious sort of thing.
Yeah.
But when I speak to people about it, it's hard, because you can't guarantee about the transition. You know, everyone wants to make a beautiful transition. You've read the book. You know what to do. You know what to do. But then I know people who haven't had beautiful transitions, very good people who've worked hard their whole lives. And I think it would help. So what I wanted to say is that just the way women say that no one ever tells another woman about the reality of childbirth, otherwise they wouldn't have any more children. There's an omerta, you know that word omerta, a silence wall among spiritual people about actually fearing death, you know, because they're not supposed to.
Right.
So I have come across all of this, and speaking to people, and I what I've concluded in some of the conversations is that if you can surrender, you know, there's the person who doesn't think about death at all. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people who are conscious of making a proper transition. If you could surrender that attachment to that, it would take a lot of pressure off a lot of spiritual people I know. That's what I'm saying. I just wonder what you could say about that.
I think you said so much, you know, and really articulate too. I remember an experience I had. I was 11 years old, and there was this amusement park, you know. There were, and you know what roller coasters are, right? And they take the breath away from you, and they just scare you to death, you know. And my friends had all left, and I was left alone in the amusement park. So somehow I thought to myself, I'm going to go on all these roller coasters. There were five of them, which I had always been afraid to do. Okay. And by the way, I must admit that I didn't go on the most severe number five. I still have that to do in my life, okay? But anyway, I went on four of them, and I was petrified. But then on the downward hill, I just let go. I said, whatever happens, And it was a completely different experience. I almost liked to get to the top because I knew that I was going to just kind of surrender to the experience. Okay. And it worked out just fine. Except I didn't go on the most severe one. it was called the Bobs, you know, the Bobs. And I guess it was terribly challenging. But anyway, you know, so I know something about what you mean by just giving yourself over to it. And you know, the universe is so big and the whole process is so big. What else can you do at the end, you know, except turn yourself over into the, you know, the great hands of the great powers. I think it's how it has to be, you know. So, yeah, okay. Can we actually? DK says you never know until the end. You may doubt even until the end. And he's talking about people like us who are supposed to, you know better and be assured and nobody. And then he says, and nobody ever came back to tell. Which is kind of interesting, considering Hamlet's father. But, you know, other places he talks about the ghost coming back, but nobody returns to tell the tale is his basic thing. But, of course, this is going to disappear during the Aquarian Age. We are assured. And the whole connection between the astral and the physical is going to be just very, you know, tenuous and easily past, I would say. So we'll have the firsthand experience at will, and that's what we really need. Well, look, you know, I was going to tell you another story, but you are so lucky I forgot it. So we'll just go on.
Thank you.
Anyway, it's in the air, and you know, a lot of heavy things are coming down now in these 8 years with Pluto so strong before the 2025 thing. We've got some people in power that would, you know, like a nice nuclear war on our hands or whatever. So we're going to be facing this death issue. I mean, when somebody goes up in a hotel and for no known reason kills 58 people and wounds 500, you know, it's madness. Okay, so it's going to be with us and we'll have to figure out how we're going to deal with it. But I would suggest, you know, if we fall asleep consciously, which is not easy necessarily to do, I think if we go back and forth with the astral plane, we'll overcome a lot of these fears. If you actually experience yourself as separable from your body, it goes a long way to assure that, you know, it's okay. All right. Thanks very much, Alex. Appreciate it. Okay, Dana, go ahead. You're down in hurricane country. I was thinking about you quite a bit. I hope everything's okay.
Oh, well, yeah, my house is one place. All my babies in my yard are kind of hurting, but that's, they can be helped. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you too, because I've tried to contact you guys a couple times for some health assistance.
Okay, well, we've been thinking about you. You know, we've been thinking in your direction.
Yeah, I just really wanted to share because of, I guess, even though I've been without him most of my incarnation, I was blessed with one of the most phenomenal experiences of my life, and it was around death. Because my father went out of incarnation from cancer when he was 49, and studying the Tibetan Book of the Dead at the time and was just beginning to really get into the Bailey teachings. And I was bringing my meditation class, which included the grandson of Ariel Bell, who was one of Alice Bailey's friends. And so I had like precursored my father, and he quit talking to anybody else about what was happening to him the last 6 months. And I was with him the last 45 minutes he was alive, and he said to me, "The lights are so bright, you know, turn them down." And I'm like, "No, they're not the ones out here, Daddy. They're the ones in there, and turn them up and merge with the brightest one." And he acknowledged that, and I watched his silver cord snap, and then I sat down on the hospital floor next to his bed to meditate, and I started going with him. And it wasn't a tunnel because he wasn't coming back. And it was such an incredibly phenomenal experience of something so much greater than phenomenal ecstatic bliss that there's nothing that has taken its place my whole entire lifetime.
So pain
and suffering, I have issues with. Death, not at all. I mean, if my uncle had not shaken my shoulder and said, it's over now, we need to leave, because at that point, it took me 5 minutes to create the room around me again. I may not have come back because it was so amazing that I had absolutely no desire to.
A lot of people, they report that. They don't want to come back. They're even irritated at being forced to come back if it's karmically required. I had some friends for whom this was an experience. So anyway, like DK says, with his typically understated manner, an entrance into fuller life.
Right. And that it is.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Dana, for sharing that. Appreciate that. Okay. Well, this is the thing now, and humanity is held by this fear. Many fears. This is one of the primary fears. So we need to do our work around this somehow, and we will, and we are. So we're just going to do that. Okay, friends, is there anything else? Anything else? Okay. Let's see. I think we know why we're studying this. We know what we're doing. The consciousness of humanity is held in thrall by many kinds of emotionally tinged thoughts. The Kama Manas rules most human thinking. And it veils the truth. And what we have to be as students of occultism is carriers of the light, carriers of the truth. And of course, that means that it can't just be all theoretical for us. We've got to prove it in our own nature. Now, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the opportunity is held out to us to prove these things. Just don't take my word for it. We prove them, and we work on proving them, and that's what our discipleship is about. And then we can speak with authority, enough authority at least to attract people into a path where they too don't just have to believe, they can prove for themselves that these things are real. We are following as real things that people believe are fantasy, but we will discover for ourselves whether it's fantasy or real. And so I just suggest that we somehow manage to do that for ourselves. Is that you, Brett?
Yes, Stacia has a written comment.
Okay, thank you. See how I recognize you from the white noise that accompanies your computer? Okay, and that's a good little mantra there, Stacia. I will face my fear and let it pass through me. Yeah. I think, that's the thing. I remember about fear and guilt, and I may have mentioned this before, but, the price of going forward is fear. Okay, we got to do that. But the price of going backward is guilt and nausea. We don't want that. So, whether we go backward or whether we go forward, we're going to have some disagreeables, as DK says, to deal with either way. But the disagreeable of facing one's fear, letting it pass through, it's better than to fall back into the guilt of not really fulfilling oneself. Right. Okay. So that's it. And there's this beautiful thing, and maybe I'll end with that thing. I'll find it here because it reminds me any fool can chase the light into the darkness. So you're paraphrasing that. And I'm going to give us something that Master DK gave us. And then let's see if I can just find it. Okay, I'll do my best. And then the 7 points. Now that'll do it. Here it is. And you know this one. And it's good for all of us because it tells us our role as light bearers, right? Okay, here we go. He who faces the light and stands within its radiance is blinded to the issues of the world of men. He passes on the lighted way to the great center of absorption. But he who feels the urge to pass that way, yet loves his brother on the darkened path, revolves upon the pedestal of light and turns the other way. He faces towards the dark, and then the 7 points of light within himself transmit the outward streaming light, and lo, the face of those upon the darkened way receives that light. For them the way is not so dark. Behind the warriors, twixt the light and dark, blazes the light of hierarchy. So this is a so marvelous description of our duty. Once a certain amount of light exists for us, our duty to others to pass the light along into the darkness and shine some light upon the way so that there can be a lightening of the path of those for whom things were very dark before. That's the destiny of a light bearer. And that, you know, whatever our ray may be, if we're studying DK here, we're going to be light bearers. If we stick with it and do as he says to do, we will bear the light, and the consequences will be right there, as we've said. Okay. All right. What I'd like to do then is, let's just do our meditation, huh? Which is dissipating the glamour of fear. And maybe, you know, here we might be concentrating, since fear is so variegated and its name is Legion, maybe we'll concentrate tonight here on the fear of death, as we've had some readings to that effect, and they've been, we're also going to deal with, in our programs coming up, the fear of the future. Maybe we'll deal with the fear of failure. You know, the fear of the future and the fear of failure are supposed to be two fears which particularly affect aspirants and disciples. And then other types of fear as well, DK describes. So we'll make a study of this and try to lighten the density which hovers around these subjects, the heaviness of these glamours stopping so many people from fully expressing their beauty, their power, and all the things that are supposed to be in their life program, so they can be more successful, we can be more successful, and so forth. Okay, so let's have our meditation. Excuse me. Right. So we'll begin simply by some moments of silence. Gather our sense of group life and group participation in service. And the silence has a synthesizing effect, so we really do, wherever we may be located in time and space, we do feel ourselves increasingly as a unity. For this kind of service. And we will use our protective formula. We know we form this cross of divinity using the eyes. And we remind ourselves that this work is not easy work, and there are dangers involved in it, as humanity is still so emotionally polarized. Even, you know, aspirants and disciples still have plenty of trouble with their astral body. So we'll take seriously Master DK's idea here that protection is needed. And so we say aloud, as the soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. Radiating divine cross of light, as we stand in the light, warding off darkness, standing in the light, standing immovable in the light. So just imagine that that cross keeps on radiating as a protection for yourself and for the group. And now we review the preparatory stages. We're going to bring up the light of matter, breathing it up from our etheric physical onto the imagined plane of mind. And on this plane of lower mind is the light of mind. So the vitality of matter and the light of mind come together on the plane of mind. And then two lights have merged, but we meditate on the light of the soul. We try to recognize it as something real. This light of the soul provided by the angel of the presence, as much of the solar angel as can be invested in the causal body. We take down this soul light and fuse it on the plane of mind with the two lesser lights. So from the plane of higher mind, the soul light comes into the lower mind where the light of matter and the light of mind are fused, and all three, we imagine, are fused together, soul, mind, and matter. This will be the basis of our searchlight, which is our illuminator and at once our weapon of dissipation of the clouds and mists and fogs and miasmas of the astral plane, as it presently is conditioned. And so we, with this fusion of three lights as one, we all say together, the light is one. And in that light, we shall see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. We're reminded of the light of day, of Scorpio, on the Buddhic plane of intuition, the real light of day. We sound the sacred word three times. So the light will continue to intensify in our lives, and especially as we work at building the Antikarana, which will lead us into the triadal and monadic light. But for the moment, the soul light is sufficient now to do this work from our Ajna center largely. And so we're going to visualize our searchlight. We're going to, as it were, as a group, turn it on. It's largely from the group Ajna Center, which is largely a fifth ray center at first. And the light of Venus, the soul of Venus, fifth ray soul of Venus, so important in doing this work. Venus, one of the important planets in the second initiation process. So we'll visualize that great searchlight going out onto the astral plane. As we say these words, thinking of their meaning, of course. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. So we are the bridge between the world of the soul and this world of the distortion of truth, and certainly distortion of desire. We're going to add to our beam the spiritual will coming ultimately from the, well, at least the planetary logos and the monad and the triad and the jewel and the lotus and the sacrifice petals and the will petal of the love circle and knowledge circle. Spiritual will descending, and we say, as we strengthen our imagined beam, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. So we get the sense that our beam, brilliant, three lights, is one, is now strengthened by the spiritual will. We're going to now dissipate imaginatively this glamour of fear, especially around the fear of death. We'll take it one part at a time, you know. Fear of death is a big one. And so as we use these words of power, we will visualize the light penetrating the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. First, visualize your beam, the beam made of all the beams of all the working members here. The group beam, brilliant, invincible in its task. It's our method of clearing the miasmas, mists, fogs, clouds, darkness around this glamour, fear of death. And so we say, word of power. Visualizing as we go, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear, especially the fear of death. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour of fear, fear of death in this case. So these are the words of power, and as we have our 5 minutes of silence and of intensity of purpose, as we see the work proceeding, we will use in our own way, but always with the visualization of the group, these words of power. So 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose. in the Yoga Sutras, it gives us good advice about the power of substitution. When thoughts contrary to yoga arise, replace those thoughts with thoughts contrary to the contrary thoughts. So in imagining the dissipation of these dark clouds which hold particular glamours, we can also imagine the radiant truth, undistorted, which results when the glamours are dissipated. And that is a positive visualization after our beam is imagined as doing its work. So then we withdraw the beam from the astral plane, back onto the mental plane. We turn it off for the moment. And we will sound the Om three times, imagining that our work has had a good effect in all the areas of the vehicles of man, but of course, especially in the astral vehicle. The Om three times. Slowly, we come back and realize that if we persist with this, we'll be doing our little bit in a spiritually occult manner to clarify the consciousness of humanity, and in doing that, clarify the action of humanity, so it's more fitting according to the divine plan. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And Tuya and I will be working in the morning. Tuya will be presenting the Soul of Nations work, an emergency work. The fires are out of control, you know. And the elements, when humanity does not have sufficient soul consciousness, the elements are out of control. Fire and water, the tests of fire and water. We've been through, and wind, and, well, we're just, you know, it's a huge volcano. There's several of them waiting. The man who is busy, and we have to balance all that with soul consciousness. Okay, so 5 a.m. we'll be doing that work, and then Sunday 5 a.m. This is all GMT time. We'll be doing the work on attracting money for hierarchical purposes. Thank you, everybody, and Brett will, you know, if you miss some of these meditations, you can get them. And in discussions, you can get them on Makara, www.makara.us, and you can participate and keep your continuity. Okay? So thank you, and we'll be seeing you, here, a little earlier than might be, restful, but we'll see you in the morning, and it'll be your night, and for some of you, and morning for the others, and thank you for being here. Talk to you later. Many blessings. All the best. Bye-bye.